Hello, and welcome to Family Folk Tales from the Nashville Public Library. I'm Susan Poulter, a librarian at the Main Library. Today's story is The Wizard King, a French tale from Andrew Lang's Yellow Fairy Book. In very ancient times, there lived a king whose power lay not only in the vast extent of his dominions, but also in the magic secrets of which he was master. After spending the greater part of his early youth in pleasure, he met a princess of such remarkable beauty that he at once asked her hand in marriage, and having obtained it, considered himself the happiest of men. After a year's time, a son was born, worthy in every way of such distinguished parents, and much admired by the whole court. As soon as the queen thought him strong enough for a journey, she set out with him secretly to visit her fairy godmother. I said secretly, because the fairy had warned the queen that the king was a magician, and as from time immemorial there had been a standing feud between the fairies and the wizards, he might not have approved of his wife's visit. The fairy godmother, who took the deepest interest in all the queen's concerns, and who was much pleased with the little prince, endowed him with the power of pleasing everybody from his cradle, as well as with a wonderful ease in learning everything which could help to make him a perfectly accomplished prince. Accordingly, to the delight of his teachers, he made the most rapid progress in his education, constantly surpassing everyone's expectations. Before he was many years old, however, he had the great sorrow of losing his mother, whose last words were to advise him never to undertake anything of importance without consulting the fairy under whose protection she had placed him. The prince's grief at the death of his mother was great, but it was nothing compared to that of the king, his father, who was quite inconsolable for the loss of his dear wife. Neither time nor reason seemed to lighten his sorrow, and the sight of all the familiar faces and things about him only served to remind him of his loss. He therefore resolved to travel for change, and by means of his magic art was able to visit every country he came to see under different shapes, returning every few weeks to the place where he had left a few followers. Having traveled from land to land in this fashion without finding anything to rivet his attention, it occurred to him to take the form of an eagle, and in this shape he flew across many countries and arrived at length in a new and lovely spot where the air seemed filled with the scent of jasmine and orange flowers with which the ground was thickly planted. Attracted by the sweet perfume, he flew lower and perceived some large and beautiful gardens filled with the rarest flowers and with fountains throwing up their clear waters into the air in 100 different shapes. A wide stream flowed through the garden, and on it floated richly ornamented barges and gondolas filled with people dressed in the most elegant manner and covered with jewels. In one of these barges sat the queen of that country with her only daughter, a maiden more beautiful than the day star, and attended by the ladies of the court. No more exquisitely lovely mortal was ever seen than this princess, and it needed all an eagle's strength of sight to prevent the king being hopelessly dazzled. He perched on the top of a large orange tree, whence he was able to survey the scene and to gaze at pleasure on the princess's charms. Now, an eagle with a king's heart in his breast is apt to be bold, and accordingly he instantly made up his mind to carry off the lovely damsel, feeling sure that having once seen her, he could not live without her. He waited till he saw her in the act of stepping ashore, when suddenly swooping down, he carried her off before her equerry in attendance had advanced to offer her his hand. The princess, on finding herself in an eagle's talons, uttered the most heartbreaking shrieks and cries. But her captor, though touched by her distress, would not abandon his lovely prey, and continued to fly through the air too fast to allow of his saying anything to comfort her. At length, when he thought they had reached a safe distance, he began to lower his flight, and gradually descending to earth, deposited his burden in a flowery meadow. He then entreated her pardon for his violence, and told her that he was about to carry her to a great kingdom over which he ruled, and where he desired she should rule with him, adding many tender and consoling expressions. For some time the princess remained speechless, but recovering herself a little, she burst into a flood of tears. The king, much moved, said, "Adorable princess, dry your tears, I implore you. My only wish is to make you the happiest person in the world." "If you speak the truth, my lord," replied the princess, "restore to me the liberty you have deprived me of. Otherwise I can only look on you as my worst enemy." The king retorted that her opposition filled him with despair, but that he hoped to carry her to a place where all around would respect her, and where every pleasure would surround her. So saying, he seized her once more, and in spite of all her cries, he rapidly bore her off to the neighborhood of his capital. Here he gently placed her on a lawn, and as he did so, she saw a magnificent palace spring up at her feet. The architecture was imposing, and in the interior, the rooms were handsome and furnished in the best possible taste. The princess, who expected to be quite alone, was pleased at finding herself surrounded by a number of pretty girls, all anxious to wait on her, whilst a brilliantly colored parrot set the most agreeable things in the world. On arriving at this palace, the king had resumed his own form, and though no longer young, he might well have pleased any other than this princess, who had been so prejudiced against him by his violence that she could only regard him with feelings of hatred, which she was at no pains to conceal. The king hoped, however, that time might not only soften her anger, but accustom her to his sight. He took the precaution of surrounding the palace with a dense cloud, and then hastened to his court, where his prolonged absence was causing much anxiety. The prince and all the courtiers were delighted to see their beloved king again, but they had to submit themselves to more frequent absences than ever on his part. He made business a pretext for shutting himself up in his study, but it was really in order to spend time with the princess, who remained inflexible. Not being able to imagine what could be the cause of so much obstinacy, the prince began to fear lest, in spite of all his precautions, she might have heard of the charms of the prince, his son, whose goodness, youth, and beauty made him adored at court. This idea made him horribly uneasy, and he resolved to remove the cause of his fears by sending the prince on his travels, escorted by a magnificent retinue. The prince, after visiting several courts, arrived at the one where the lost princess was still deeply mourned. The king and queen received him most graciously, and some festivities were revived to do him honor. One day, when the prince was visiting the queen in her own apartments, he was much struck by a most beautiful portrait. He eagerly inquired whose it was, and the queen, with many tears, told him it was all that was left of her beloved daughter, who had suddenly been carried off, she neither knew where or how. The prince was deeply moved, and vowed that he would search the world for the princess, and take no rest till he had found and restored her to her mother's arms. The queen assured him of her eternal gratitude, and promised, should he succeed, to give him her daughter in marriage, together with all the estates she herself owned. The prince, far more attracted by the thoughts of possessing the princess than her promised dower, set forth in his quest after taking leave of the king and queen, the latter giving him a miniature of her daughter, which she was in the habit of wearing. His first act was to seek the fairy under whose protection he had been placed, and he implored her to give him all the assistance of her art and counsel in this important matter. After listening attentively to the whole adventure, the fairy asked for time to consult her books. After due consideration, she informed the prince that the object of his search was not far distant, but it was too difficult for him to attempt to enter the enchanted palace where she was, as the king his father had surrounded it with a thick cloud, and that the only expedient she could think of would be to gain possession of the princess's parrot. This, she added, did not appear impossible, as it often flew about to some distance in the neighborhood. Having told the prince all this, the fairy went out in hopes of seeing the parrot, and soon returned with the bird in her hand. She promptly shut it up in a cage, and, touching the prince with her wand, transformed him into an exactly similar parrot, after which she instructed him how to reach the princess. The prince reached the palace in safety, but was so dazzled at first by the princess's beauty, which far surpassed his expectations, that he was quite dumb for a time. The princess was surprised and anxious, and fearing the parrot, who was her greatest comfort, had fallen ill, she took him in her hand and caressed him. This soon reassured the prince and encouraged him to play his part well, and he began to say 1,000 agreeable things which charmed the princess. Presently the king appeared, and the parrot noticed with joy how much he was disliked. As soon as the king left, the princess retired to her dressing room. The parrot flew after her and overheard her lamentations at the continued persecutions of the king, who had pressed her to consent to their marriage. The parrot said so many clever and tender things to comfort her that she began to doubt whether this could indeed be her own parrot. When he saw her well disposed towards him, he exclaimed, "Madam, I have a most important secret to confide to you, and I beg you not to be alarmed by what I am about to say. I am here on behalf of the Queen, your mother, with the object of delivering your highness, to prove which, behold this portrait which she gave me herself." So saying, he drew forth the miniature from under his wing. The princess's surprise was great, but after what she had seen and heard, it was impossible not to indulge in hope, for she had recognized the likeness of herself, which her mother always wore. The parrot, finding she was not much alarmed, told her who he was, all that her mother had promised him, and the help he had already received from a fairy who had assured him that she would give him means to transport the princess to her mother's arms. When he found her listening attentively to him, he implored the princess to allow him to resume his natural shape. She did not speak, so he drew a feather from his wing, and she beheld before her a prince of such surpassing beauty that it was impossible not to hope that she might owe her liberty to so charming a person. Meantime, the fairy had prepared a chariot to which she harnessed 2 powerful eagles. Then, placing the cage with the parrot in it, she charged the bird to conduct it to the window of the princess's dressing room. This was done in a few minutes, and the princess, stepping into the chariot with the prince, was delighted to find her parrot again. As they rose through the air, the princess remarked a figure mounted on an eagle's back, flying in front of the chariot. She was rather alarmed, But the prince reassured her, telling her it was the good fairy to whom she owed so much, and who was now conducting her in safety to her mother. That same morning, the king woke suddenly from a troubled sleep. He had dreamt that the princess was being carried off from him, and transforming himself into an eagle, he flew to the palace. When he failed to find her, he flew into a terrible rage and hastened home to consult his books, by which means he discovered that it was his son who had deprived him of this precious treasure. Immediately he took the shape of a harpy, and filled with rage was determined to devour his son, and even the princess too, if only he could overtake them. He set out at full speed, but he started too late, and was further delayed by a strong wind, which the fairy raised behind the young couple so as to baffle any pursuit. You may imagine the rapture with which the queen received the daughter she had given up for lost, as well as the amiable prince who had rescued her. The fairy entered with them and warned the queen that the wizard king would shortly arrive, infuriated by his loss, and that nothing could preserve the prince and princess from his rage and magic unless they were actually married. The queen hastened to inform the king her husband, and the wedding took place on the spot. As the ceremony was completed, the wizard king arrived. His despair at being so late bewildered him so entirely that he appeared in his natural form and attempted to sprinkle some black liquid over the bride and bridegroom, which was intended to kill them. But the fairy stretched out her wand, and the liquid dropped on the magician himself. He fell down senseless, and the princess's father, deeply offended at the cruel revenge which had been attempted, ordered him to be removed and locked up in prison. Now, as magicians lose all their power as soon as they are in prison, the king felt himself much embarrassed at being thus at the mercy of those he had so greatly offended. The prince implored and obtained his father's pardon, and the prison doors were opened. No sooner was this done than the wizard king was seen in the air under the form of some unknown bird, exclaiming as he flew off that he would never forgive either his son or the fairy the cruel wrong they had done him. Everyone entreated the fairy to settle in the kingdom where she now was, to which she consented. She built herself a magnificent palace, to which she transported her books and fairy secrets, and where she enjoyed the sight of the perfect happiness she had helped to bestow on the entire royal family. That was The Wizard King, from Andrew Lang's Yellow Fairy Book. Special thanks to Ginger Sands for our theme music. You can find more of Ginger's music at iTunes or on her website at www.gingersands.com. And if you'd like to comment on today's story, send me an email. I can be reached at susan.poulter, that's P-O-U-L-T-E-R, at nashville.gov. Thanks for listening.